Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Bennett. This is episode 132. It's Monday, March the 11th, 2024. And today my guest is a former two-time state champion in high school. He was a national champion with the National Wrestling Alliance and is presently an educator. Mr. Nick Hilton, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your parents. I know your dad, but I don't know, never heard anything about your mother or anything.
Well, if you've ever been to a wrestling match, you would never be able to pick my mother out of the crowd because she is probably the really quiet lady up on the top of the bleachers that's not saying much. She's not very loud. She's just there watching. Growing up, I didn't start wrestling until middle school, but I played baseball from T-ball through, and I can't remember a sporting event that my parents missed.
Really?
Ever. Now, when my sister got into some sports, my mom and dad would
split it up.
They'd have to split it up because we'd have stuff going on at the same time, but both of us always had a parent or both parents at every sporting event.
And you didn't start wrestling until middle school. I didn't realize that. I was thinking you might have been a youth wrestler.
I had 1 year of youth wrestling in the sixth grade. Because we, Trap Hill Middle School didn't have a program until I was a seventh grader. That was the first year that Trap Hill Middle School had middle school wrestling.
Did you play youth football?
Nope. I didn't start playing football till middle school, seventh grade.
When you got into middle school, Kenny McMillan was your coach.
Yep.
Wasn't he? And Kenny was a Shady Spring product. I think he was a 2-time state champion himself. And, Kenny was an excellent coach.
He was. He was that old school mentality of, we're going to get out there and get after it and scrap. He was mean.
That's the way he wrestled, too.
And when I was a 12-year-old kid, I'm like, why is this guy so mean? I didn't understand it at first, but, looking back at it now, it was super appreciated. So.
There was a story that when Kenny was in high school, there was another local wrestler that was in another division, and both of them were really good, but they never got to wrestle each other, and something was always happened or whatever, and when the season was over, I don't know whether it's true or not, but somebody had told me that Kenny sent the guy an entry blank to a tournament that was coming up because he was going to be in that weight class.
That doesn't surprise me.
That's how competitive he was. But the years that he coached there, you guys had some excellent middle school teams. Now, somewhere along the line, you went to Fargo, didn't you?
I went to Fargo 3 times.
3 times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, All-American out there between my sophomore and junior season, I think 2006.
That's quite a trip. How long does it take to get out there?
Well,
Fargo's in South Dakota, right?
North Dakota.
North Dakota, yeah.
So I made the trip 3 times, and every time we took a different form of travel. I think the first time that I went out, we flew, so it wasn't bad. Second time I went, we went in 15-passenger vans. Wasn't the greatest trip. It's about 24 hours if you drive.
Wow.
It's a very long trip. The last trip was the worst trip of them all. We went on a Greyhound, and the bus broke down somewhere in Iowa, and we're about 36 hours getting out there. It was rough. And what made it even worse is, you wrestle West Virginia State qualifier to go out there, freestyle states, usually at the end of April, beginning of May, and that's when you pick your weight class for Fargo. Well, you don't go to Fargo until the end of July. I'm also heavy and hungry. So on a Greyhound for 36 hours wasn't a lot of fun, but
not much to do but eat if you can.
If you can. Yeah. Unfortunately, I could not. So
I wasn't sure how far it was. I'd never been to, I thought it was in South Dakota. But I know that's a pretty tough competition kind of way of measuring things. When you got into high school, your ninth grade year, you were sixth in the state. 10th grade year, you were sixth in the state, 160. And then in 2007, you won state championship at 171, undefeated. And who were you? I know Randy Daniel was your coach, head coach. Who helped him, Bobby?
Bobby was still at the middle school with Kenny.
Okay.
Lou Bakijan. I don't know if you remember him or not.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Big Lou was in there. And then Randy was always good about bringing past wrestlers in. So we always had some younger guys that were probably in their 20s that came in and helped run practice and stuff like that. But Randy and Lou were the two dudes that were there for us as far as coaching went through my high school.
You were a good student. Was there any teachers in high school that might have had an influence on what you pursued? Or
so really, Randy was a huge influence for me as far as pursuing education. And I just loved what he was able to do for us as a coach and as a teacher. He was a huge influence on me as far as that went. Jean Richart, also another huge influence. She was our gym teacher. She would come down and watch us wrestle at the state tournament every year. Not because she loved wrestling, just because she loved her students and she loved watching us compete and she wanted to support us. And then Gary and Alicia Peters, they were huge supporters of the wrestling team and they were a great influence in the school too. I mean, there was just so many great teachers at Liberty that helped support us and as far as wrestlers and as students. So Miss Gentry, I still see her real often, her and her husband. I couldn't name them all. I mean, that whole school was super supportive of what we were doing and really helped influence us to, especially me, to go back into the education field. Unfortunately, I didn't come back to the same education field that I was in when I was going through school. But
when I first started the junior high programs in Raleigh County in the 1970s, and Trapp Hill was a middle school and they would wrestle some, but when they first started, all the county schools just kind of wrestled each other a couple of times and had the county tournament and that was it, you know.
Right.
And Trapp Hill, because they were middle school wrestling against junior highs, there weren't any other middle schools around. And so they were usually weaker at the upper weights. You know, they had some pretty good little weights, but the upper weights were not as good. And so, it just wasn't catching on down there because they didn't have success and it was nowhere to go to have success that much.
Right.
But then when everybody went to more of a junior high schedule, it seemed like that Trapp Hill caught on pretty quick. The senior year, I'll never forget this. I've written about it. But you were undefeated and we got down to state tournament and it just so happened, whatever pill they drew or whatever, but Cody Brand from Berkeley Springs.
Yeah, Cody Reed.
Kobe, is that?
Cody Reed.
Cody Reed, yeah. He was undefeated also. He was the defending 189-pound champion, and you were the 171-pound champion, but you had moved up a weight class that year. And it just so happened you guys, if you were both one, you were going to meet in the finals. And that was kind of the talk of the state tournament. You know, it was who's going to win this match? You know, who's going to get this? You know, and it was one of the most anticipated matches I had witnessed since I'd been going to the state tournaments. There's three or four I can recall that a lot of people talked about, but a couple of those they had in the semifinals instead of the finals. You're undefeated, he's undefeated, he's state champion, you're state champion. What was your thinking in that match? I mean,
I was way less nervous in that one as compared to the first one. I don't know why exactly, but I had got to, I guess, become confident enough in what I did that as a wrestler that I felt I would be okay going into that match. I'd watched him some. I knew I was going to be able to get to an underhook, which was kind of my thing. And, you know, I was able to take him down twice in the first period. that was really my game plan, was to score early, kind of take him out of his element, make him have to wrestle me rather than me wrestle him.
Yeah.
And see where it went from there. But I felt confident in the neutral position. I knew I was going to be able to get out from underneath him. I just felt real confident going into that match. I think it was 4-2 going into the second period. I can't remember who goes down first, if it was me or him. But either way, it ended up, both of us got an escape, one in the second, one in the third, and that was the match.
Yeah.
I can remember getting hit with stalling, warned, with about 30 seconds left, and I shot in on a single leg and kind of hung out there until the end of the match. I never did end up scoring. We kind of ended in a little scramble position. But, yeah, I felt confident in knowing that I was going to be able to get to my takedowns and I was going to be able to get off the mat.
And I was sitting up there with some independence people, and it was kind of funny that all the people from Raleigh County was rooting for you. I mean, Beckley and Shady and everybody, you know, kind of come together. And that made it pretty special. What kind of, when you were in high school, what kind of music did you listen to?
A little bit of everything, which I still, to this day, listen to a little bit of everything. Rock and roll, hip hop, country music. If I'm about to go wrestle, I like to listen to something that's got a little more upbeat tempo. If I'm riding in the car, I like to listen to the country station or the news or...
You listen to new country or old country or...
Both.
Both.
Yeah. I think some of the new country songs, I don't know that they're really country or not, but they're catchy.
Yeah. That's kind of the way I am too. I like some of the new artists, but I'm kind of I like Toby Keith, you know, and but I'm kind of a Merle Haggard guy too, back from the old days.
Okay.
But now after high school, you were nominated to go to the Naval Academy. Who nominated you? It takes a politician, doesn't it?
It does. So because I waited, I didn't really have any intention of going to the Naval Academy out of high school. Well, not until probably fall or winter of my senior year. And I was behind. The application process to go up there and everything you have to get done it takes some time.
Uh-huh.
So, I had met with them and I was dead set on going to West Virginia. That's where I wanted to go. And Navy wasn't even on my list at the time. But they came knocking and went on a recruiting trip up there, and I loved the place. But we ended up having to actually get a presidential nomination for me to go because I was so far behind with the process of applying and all of that. So the Naval Academy actually helped me get this presidential nomination to go. So I guess it would have been George W. Bush, maybe. Would have been the president at the time. So my mom and dad still have the letter at the house of where they did the presidential nomination.
So they put you into prep, naval prep.
Yeah, so if you go to a service academy, you cannot redshirt while you're there. So if you're an athlete or if you desire to go to a service academy, but your grades or test scores aren't quite where they want them to be, they will send you to the prep school for a year. So most athletes that get recruited go to prep school for a year to go ahead and get that red shirt year. And that's essentially what that was.
It was in Rhode Island, wasn't it?
Yes.
Dang, well, that's a long ways.
It is. It was a cool year, though. I'd never been very far up northeast, but we were allowed to leave for the weekend. So I went to Boston. I went into Maine. I visited all the northeast states. So it was really cool to get to do that. And Rhode Island, nice springs, nice summers, terrible winters. Where we ate chow at was maybe an eighth of a mile walk from our little dormitory. But we're right on the bay. We're kind of like an island and the bay surrounds us. But you'd be walking, and by the time you get there, you got like icicles and snow and stuff hanging off the side of your face every day.
They had a wrestling team. I think Larry Gardner was the coach.
Leroy, yeah.
Leroy Gardner, okay. And so you wrestled about 30 times, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And they were part of the National Wrestling Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Who all did you wrestle?
So we wrestled all over. We would go into New York and New Jersey, the northeast part of Pennsylvania. So we, one of the schools that sticks out to me is Bryant University. Jared Grossman, 197 pounder there. He's a senior when I was doing my prep school year there as a freshman. I probably wrestled him 4 to 6 times and never could beat this kid. It's always a 1 or 2 point match going to overtime. I just never could get past this kid. I don't know what, if it was a mental block or whatever. But then we go down to nationals, and I'm the 8 seed going into at nationals. And upset the 1 seed, and this other kid from Ohio University and Grossman hit in the semifinals. And that kid wore Grossman out. And I'm like, man, I'm about to hit this kid in the finals. So I'm about to get my butt kicked kind of deal. And, you know, end up wrestling that kid in the finals, and, you know, I beat him with a last-second switch. Yeah, I think there was 10 seconds left in the match to win by a point. But, yeah, we wrestled a little bit everywhere. We did, I think they had an open tournament at Binghamton that we would wrestle in. But we stayed in the Northeast mostly.
Well, there's some good wrestling up there.
There is.
But who was the coach at Navy at that time?
Bruce Burnett.
Okay.
And absolutely amazing. You know, he was a little older, couldn't really get out and roll with us kind of deal. But just the mind that he has for wrestling is phenomenal. Yeah, he just, hey, coach, if I'm in this position, what do I do? And he'll rack off 4 or 5 different things that you can do.
Well, they got Kerry Kolak there now. And it was kind of, I told the story in one of my other interviews when we were going to taking kids to Waynesburg and Altoona. Kolak was wrestling at that time in the youth, and he kind of liked our bunch of guys for some reason. He hung around our guys. Of course, every once in a while, one of our guys would have to wrestle him, you know, but he won most of the time. But we knew him when he was 12 years old, you know, and he's there now. I'm sure he can still wrestle with some of them guys.
Oh, yeah.
But now, after that particular year, where was the national championship held at that time?
Virginia Beach.
Yeah, I know sometimes sure. It's in Kansas and stuff.
Yeah, they were in Virginia that year. I think they were at the convention center. But, you know, we made the trip down from Rhode Island to Virginia Beach, which was a long one. I think it was 11 or 13 hours, something like that. And we came in 15-passenger vans.
Now, did you decide not to go on into the Naval Academy, or did they decide, or what was the deal?
So, I actually went the year after to the academy.
Did you?
I did. Competed in the Golden Blue matches that they do. Actually went out to Reno and wrestled in a tournament out there. So they had a senior at 97 when I got down there. And we went back and forth. Yeah, he'd win one, I'd win one. He'd win one, I'd win one. So they were taking him places most of the time as the starter. And Scott Steele was our heavyweight, and he had gotten hurt. So Coach Burnett asked if I would be willing to wrestle heavyweight. I said, if that's what you want me to do, you know, I'll step in and do it. Well, just remember, we need you at 97, you know, you're only allowed to be X amount of weight over. So I had to weigh about 199, still wrestling heavyweight. I was like the lightest heavyweight there. But went to Reno, wrestled heavyweight, ended up breaking my nose while we was out there, and the bone had actually came through this time. So, you know, you can see my nose is pretty crooked, bones over here, 9 nose breaks, 1 surgery, and when I was out there, broken nose, bone popped through the skin, got back to Annapolis, had surgery on it, and that was pretty much the season. 6 to 8 weeks before I could get back on the mat. Reno's in December, so my season was essentially over. But I was there through the spring, started doing, you know, out of season training that spring. Summertime comes, and I wanted to come back home. I didn't want to do it anymore. And I've been that way for a while. Coach Burnett had called my dad and was like, hey, you need to come up and see him. And they made arrangements for that to happen. I just didn't want to be there. Yeah, like I said, my parents had never missed anything. My dad got to watch me win a national championship. That's the only college match that he really got to watch. And I just missed home. I love the wrestling program there. I love Coach Burnett. Like I said, I think he's probably one of the most brilliant wrestling minds around. I hated the Naval Academy. I was just, didn't like the lifestyle, didn't like the, just everything about it. I wanted to come home. And I talked to my dad about it. He came up and visited me in the fall. And that spring, I still felt the same way. I'm like, I don't want to be here. I want to go home. And I stayed up there over the summer, took some summer classes, did some trainings that I had to do. Still didn't want to be there. So August hits. I go see the commander for our pod. I say, hey, what do I got to do to get out of here? Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And the commander, she gave me all the paperwork I needed to do. It took me about 2 weeks to get all the signatures that I needed and this and that. I called my dad. I said, hey, I got 24 hours. You have to come pick me up. Needless to say, it was a rough ride home. I had some family that lived in Frederick, which was maybe an hour from Annapolis. So my cousin from Frederick actually came and picked me up. And I waited at her house for my dad to get me. But we rode 6 hours in a car back home and spoke maybe three words. he was upset with me for a little bit.
That was when you get Naval Academy, and they're actually paying you to a certain extent. I mean, you know, everything's free.
Yeah.
And but there is a commitment after the Navy Academy. What, 6 years?
So it's when you go in your junior year, you sign what's called a 2-for-7.
Okay.
They gave you two. Your freshman and sophomore year. Now you're going to give them 7. Your junior and senior year and 5 years.
Okay, I see.
Now, you know, that's the standard. Now, and if you go in your junior year and you decide you want to leave, you can still leave, but you owe them every dollar. And it's about $125,000 a year.
Whoa.
So.
What if you can't pay it? I mean, what? They make you stay in the Navy, right?
I'm not 100% sure. I was able to get out my, you know, I don't even think I had attended a class yet as a sophomore. And we got out, I got out of there and I spent some time trying to decide where I was going to go. And
so you set out a semester?
I did.
And,
yeah, so I ended up going to WVU that spring in January.
But you were done with wrestling.
Nope. So when I got up there, I wrestled at WVU. Where I transferred, I was ineligible for a year. So I practiced from January of 11 to January of 12. And that January, we had a duel against Maryland right at the beginning of the month. I mean, I was literally eligible to compete for maybe 3 or 4 days. And so they gave me the starting nod at 97. I go out and I wrestle Christian Boley from Maryland. And he was, I don't know, 4th or 5th in the country at the time. End up wrestling him a decent match, especially just returning back into competition. The next week, we have a duel against, might have been Clarion, Edinburgh, someone like that. During warm-ups, guy snaps me down. I go to catch myself, broke two of the metatarsals in my hand. End up wrestling my match with a broke hand. And then the x-rayed afterwards, 6 to 8 weeks in a cast, season's over. So that's the 12 year. And then 12 to 13, I wrestled that year until maybe mid-February. And I liked WVU as far as the school and stuff went. I didn't like the coaching staff there. It was completely opposite of the Naval Academy for me. If I could have took WVU and Navy wrestling and stuck them together, it would have been like the perfect combination for me. But I struggled with the way they did stuff as far as the coaches went and just the way they treated people, which the year after that, they all got fired and brought in a new staff.
Nate Carr wasn't there at that time, was it?
No, it was
already gone.
Turnbull was a head coach, and then you had Greg Jones was the associate head coach. But yeah, I wrestled from 11 through 13 with them. And my final year of school up there, which was the 13-14 year, I was just a student. It was the last year of eligibility I had. And I'd been hurt and just, I wasn't enjoying it anymore.
Yeah.
So I stepped away and decided I was just going to be a student and had a good year, got out of there and came back home. So
now you got a degree in education, teaching English?
So I got a bachelor's degree in English at WVU. and came back home and actually got a teaching job teaching English on a permit. So I spent the next year and a half getting a master's degree in education so that I could get fully licensed. And then I taught English at Liberty from 2014 until 2021.
Yeah, there's not a lot of men that teach English.
No, I was really an outcast in the department head meeting and stuff like that. I was the only male. If we had a county English meeting, there might have been three of us in the entire county. It was
Well, I taught English, and it was kind of weird. What made me go to college, my 12th grade English teacher was a lady who was a great teacher. And in the spring of my senior year, I actually was going to go in the Air Force. And she said, as I was going, everybody was talking about they'd been accepted to go to college, all this stuff. And as I was going out the door one day, she said, "Wayne, what are you going to do next year?" And I said, "Well, I'm thinking about going to the Air Force." Well, that was during the Vietnam era. And she said, "You need to go to college and you need to be a teacher, and don't be a phys ed teacher." She said, "You need to be an English teacher." Well, that right there was all it took. And I mean, it just bam, because I always thought she was a great teacher. And so that's what I did and never regretted it, you know. And it just took that one little thing my last year of high school. It's kind of rare. But the weird thing about English, and I don't even know where they do this anymore, I've been out of it too long, but I used to sit in class and diagram sentences. And I like to do that. Yeah, give me a sentence and I'll diagram it. I don't care what you do. You know, and it's kind of like drawing up plays in football. You know, I mean, I work on it, and I don't even know that they do that anymore. And I like the literature part too. But
yeah, that's my favorite part, the literature. As far as diagramming sentences go, they still do it at the college level because I had a class up there that was essentially on phonetics and diagramming sentences.
Wow. And, most people hate that stuff.
I didn't enjoy it.
But you were teaching at Liberty, and when you first came back, you tried to, or you opened up kind of a wrestling school with Sophia.
Yeah, so I've tried to do quite a few different things. The guy that was leasing the building in Sophia, they were running like a little auction house or something. And we had some mats up there that we would roll out a couple days a week. And we had a few kids coming. Me and Mike Carpenter was doing that, just trying to work with some kids and get them better. We weren't making any money, you know, and what money we were making, we were paying the guy to let us use the building kind of deal. So it didn't last very long. Everybody else had their own kind of things going on.
You got to try stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried that, and we've came back and for 4 years tried to run all three from youth up wrestling programs down at Liberty, and which is impossible to do.
Yeah.
You can do it, but you're going to be real tired, and you're going to have a upset wife when you get home. At the end of the
day. Well, I tried to run people don't remember, but I tried to run a summer freestyle leg of high school wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And we had signups, and it's through the Y at that time. And I had six teams. I had a team from Shady, a couple teams from Beckley, and I was going to referee, and I've read everything I could about freestyle. Didn't know a whole lot about that. But we wrestled at the old Y, and it started out like it was going to be something successful. And then we did that in the summer, and as the summer went along, one team would show up, only two guys would be on there, and it just kind of phased out, you know. But the first two or three matches, I mean, it was full teams and different, you know. Kids learned a little bit. We had a clinic beforehand about freestyle wrestling. I had a guy come in and do it, but you got to try those kind of things. You're working at the federal prison now.
I am. Yeah, I teach teaching GED classes out there.
Well, you got a captive audience.
Yes.
Yeah. And how do those guys, are those guys that don't have GEDs or
so it's federal law that if you don't have a high school diploma or GED, that you have to be enrolled in GED class or on the GED waiting list to be enrolled in class while you're incarcerated. And usually 70 to 80% of the time, the guys you get up there, they want to get their GED. They want to learn. And then the other 20 to 30% are a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to come. They got other stuff they want to do. And it's a little harder dealing with grown men, you know. But they also know that there's consequences for not coming. So most of the time, it's easy. You know, these guys struggle with struggle with math a lot. So we teach a lot of math. But overall, I enjoy the job.
How many do you have in a class?
On average, 15 to 20 in a class. And then I usually have four classes a day. So I see anywhere from 60 to 80 inmates a day.
They've combined the youth teams in the area and come up with this Coalfield Elite. How come that happened? I mean, you used to have a Beckley Central and a Raleigh West and a Young Guns. What happened?
So this was our second year with Coalfield Elite. And I guess maybe 3 years ago, Jeff Varney came to me, wanted me to take over Young Guns. You know, and I'm coaching at Raleigh West at the time. We got a small team. And I'm actually taking my son to Young Guns on Wednesday to Independence for him to practice because he doesn't have anyone his size to practice with at Raleigh West. So we had been going up there, and he said, why don't you take Young Guns over? I said, man, I'm gonna spend another year down here and see. You know, I'm trying to get this thing up and rolling. And you know, this went on for a little bit, and you know, I talked to my wife about it. She's a big part of this. But I said, we're going up there anyway to get Atticus good practice partners. And not necessarily good practice partners, but practice partners that are his size. You know, the one person, because like I said, we had a very small team at Raleigh West. We had some younger kids and a few older ones. But the only kid that my son had to practice with was a year older and about 20 pounds heavier. And that's the only one that was pushing him that wasn't way older or way younger. And we talked about it. So I called Jeff up. I'm at Walmart one day. I called Jeff. Said, I'd be willing to take it over if we can combine these two programs. They're not going to be Raleigh West. They're not going to be Young Guns. We're not going to practice at either school. Practice at a neutral location kind of deal. And we'll come up with a team name, colors, whatever. He was cool with it. So that's kind of how Coalfield Elite got started. I worked with David Hart at the time on trying to figure out a name for Coalfield Elite. And that's what we came up with. But you know, Jeff has the building down in Mabscott that the Arsenal runs out of. So we were using Arsenal's practice, you know, their facility. That was going to be the plan, was to rent from Arsenal, use their facility, run our club out of there. And this is how we ended up with Beckley, too. Chris Mackins, and of course, Jeff Neal and Heather, they're all still involved. We all meet up to try to figure out how to get our youth team and Beckley Junior Eagles in there at the same time, while Jeff and Heather's also trying to run their Arsenal business. So we're sitting there, and we sat there probably for an hour, going back and forth trying to figure stuff out that where we could get in there two or three nights a week, each one of us. It just wasn't working. Like we could not come up with something. There was just too much was going on in a short period of time. So, and I had already kind of run the idea past Jeff, Neil, and you know, we just threw it out there. Like, why don't we just put them all together? And we had looked at the numbers from the year before. I think Young Guns had like 35 kids. We had 12 or 15, and Beckley had 17. So we're sitting there, okay, that's about 55, 60 kids. That's reasonable. Like, we can work with that in the space that we've got, even if we have to run two practices. So we all agreed to do this. We have our first, I think we had four signups that year, first year. First three of them, they were 60 kids. Like, this is what we figured we was going to have. We're there. Last sign up, here comes 45 kids. So we're at 105. What do we do with 105 kids? I'm talking to Chris Mackins, who was, you know, he was the Beckley guy that was helping us coach, helping us get all this started up. And he's like, I've never experienced 105. That's, me either. So it was a learning curve for us, you know. And did we do everything right? Absolutely not, because we didn't know what to do. You know, we were just figuring it out. We thought we had a pretty good plan coming into this next season, and then we end up with 123.
Wow. They all practiced at the same time?
No. So the first year we ran practices 3 days a week, and they were doubled up. We split them into two groups. This year, we were in a smaller space. You know, Jeff leased the building that he was in the first year. They sold that building, so we had to move across the road, and we were in a smaller room. So we ran practices 5 days a week this year. Monday was a double practice, two groups, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, each group had its own single practice.
So you got to be there all the time.
And then we wrestled on Saturday and Sunday.
Phew, that's a full-time job.
It was a lot. This was a really, really hard season for me. And, you know, we always have our beginning of the season meeting or end of the season meeting. And at the end of the season, you know, we got together as a group, and, you know, we have a board and everything, and we voted on it. And, you know, next year we're only going to take 80 kids. Not because we don't want to take 123, but at the end of both seasons, you know, we're between 70 and 80 kids two consecutive years at the end of the year, no matter how many we start with. So these kids that wrestled this year, you know, they're going to get a little postcard in the mail. You know, I got their mailing address. It says, hey, you have this 24-hour window to sign up. And at that point, if you don't sign up in this 24-hour window, your spot will be open to the public. And if 50 of them sign up, there'll be 30 spots that go out to whoever else. If 80 of them sign up, there ain't no more spots. And, I mean, we just can't come up with a better way to do it.
Of the number, the large number that you had, where did most of the kids come from?
So, breakdown of it, you've got between, on average, 15 to 20 coming from the Liberty area. You've got probably 40 to 50 between Beckley and Coal City each. That's like this year. You know, I did the breakdown of the numbers. We had, not counting kids that have moved up, we had one kid that had left us and went to Shady, and one kid that had moved and went to Bluefield. We had a few kids move up to middle school. We had 60 returning wrestlers out of the 123. So there were 63 new faces there this year.
Wow. That's a good thing as far as the interest.
Correct.
But it's reality is you don't, it's hard to do.
It's very hard. And I feel like with that many kids, even as many coaches as we had in the room, and we invite any parent that is willing to come in and help. But as many people as we've had in the room, you know, and we'd have up to 12 coaches at one practice.
Wow.
Which is great. But when you got 50 some kids in there, it doesn't matter if you have 12 coaches. They're just not getting the attention that they need. The group is just too large.
You're not going to get the repetitions for the good kids. I mean, it's yeah, I understand that.
And that's something we do too. We actually, you know, we had the two groups. We had a group this year that was 4-year-olds and first year 5-year-olds. And they only practiced one day a week on Wednesday. And then the other two groups, they had about 40 to 45 in each group. You had one group that was a little more experienced, and you had one group that was a little more beginner. And that does help. That helped a lot as far as splitting them up. And, you know, one group was able to move a little faster than the other group kind of deal. One group was able to focus on some little stuff so that they could progress to that next group. But it still just is, it's super hard. And, you know, I don't want to push kids away from wrestling, but we just cannot take on. I just don't feel right taking on that many kids and not allowing them to get that 100% that they need at yeah. every practice.
Plus, you had the league competition over Woodrow. I mean, that's like a huge tournament in one day. And then you had a tournament after the Fallen Heroes. I mean, that takes a lot of help, you know, to do those things. An organization, and I mean, it's just like, I don't know what you had, 300 and some kids at the Fallen Heroes or 400?
Yeah, so we ran four tournaments this year. We always get the first league tournament of the year, and we hosted it at Woodrow. typically at a league tournament, you see 200 to 300 kids. We had over 500 kids at the first league match.
Wow.
So then we go into Fallen Heroes is our next tournament that we host, 375. Then we host the south side of our conference. I think there's one as many kids at that one, 260 or 70, I think. And then we hosted the state regional to qualify for youth states.
That was huge. Wasn't
it? It was huge. There was a lot of kids, and Woodrow can't. I mean, Woodrow's as big a high school gym as you can come across. We actually had our end of the season league meeting yesterday and voted to host it at the Nicholas County Armory just because of space.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We've tried it at Lewis County 2 years ago. We tried it at Woodrow this year. There's not a high school gym big enough unless you split it into two sessions to do it all at once.
Well, that brings me to, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but you got girls wrestling up in the junior high or middle schools and high school. You got wrestling, the boys wrestling is actually growing nationwide. And right now, you know, girls wrestling is the hottest, the fastest growing scholastic sport in the nation. And they had that at the state tournament this year, the girls tournament. But sooner or later, the logistics are going to come in. Right now, that's the boys' coaches are usually coaching the girls' team. Well, they're going to want paid more, you know. And then it'll come down to a point that, well, we want to take the boys to this tournament, but the girls are having a tournament over here, so you're probably going to have separate coaches, more coaches. And these counties are not real open to freeing up more money for coaches. I can remember when I first started coaching junior high, I didn't have a paid assistant. They didn't pay us over Christmas. And it was, I mean, we got like a lump sum, like $800.
Yeah.
And actually, it was me and another guy that went and complained about, hey, I'm practicing over Christmas as many times as the basketball team is, and they're getting paid, and I'm not getting paid. And so we were the ones that got the thing changed in Raleigh County. And then also they finally added a paid assistant, but I had been coaching for 10 years before we ever got that. And I had volunteers, but, you know, then they got strict about volunteers, who you could have as a volunteer. But things are changing. Is there anything that you would like to see? You've wrestled, competed, and coached at every level almost. Is there anything any changes that haven't been made that you'd like to see?
As far as the girls wrestling goes, I actually enjoyed watching the girls wrestling this year at the state tournament.
I think everybody did, you know.
I enjoyed it more than the boys, really. Not because I didn't think the wrestling was as technical and crisp. But these girls just go out and get after it. And, you know, I liked that. And it was really fun to watch them and get to see that for the first time in Huntington. So it was really cool. I would like to go ahead and like to see them go ahead and sanction it, because I think that is going to increase that number to what they're wanting it to be.
Yeah.
Because right now, if I have a daughter that was in high school, I do not want her wrestling a high school boy. I just wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, in youth league, I wouldn't care. Middle school and high school, that's another story. And I feel a lot of parents, dads, moms feel the same way. I don't want my daughter going out there wrestling a high school boy. I get it. But if you sanction this and say, okay, it's going to be separated, okay, well, I wouldn't care if you tried, you know.
And but you're talking about now two practices, you know, and all that. So like I say, you almost have to have separate coaches or you're going to be working.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
the guys will want more money. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. But
it is. And I think they're still a year or two away from it. West Virginia will be last, as usual, you know, because that's what we do for whatever reason. We can't get on the train of falling in line with everyone else. I don't know how many states it is now, but it's close to 40.
Yeah.
That it's already sanctioned it. So.
Yeah, I agree. One thing I'd like to see at the college level, I'd like to see 225-pound class or 230.
Yeah, I've always said that.
And I don't know why they don't, but...
I know that year when I was at prep school, the NWCA or NCWA, whatever the acronym is for it...
they have a weight.
They have a 235.
Yeah.
Which I think is a little heavy on the heavy side, but a 220 or 225 between 97 and heavyweight would be great.
Yeah.
Not that it comes down to criteria very often, but having an odd number of weight classes makes it a little easier to avoid that. Yeah. Rather than having 10, you have that 11th one. So that would be cool. I'd like to see the 3-point takedown wash down to high school, which it will eventually.
I like the 3-point takedown.
I do too. Yeah.
Some people want riding time back in high school. I'm not sure about that, but I'm not sure that a lot of the schools have the personnel that can keep track of riding time and injury time and regular time.
That's a lot. And I'm not a huge fan of riding time anyway. I was never a great top wrestler. Still not great at it.
Well, it doesn't really come into play too much in college, you know. And something I noticed too, I've watched more college wrestling the last 4 years on the computer because of pandemic and all that. And I noticed the college referees will call stalemate a lot faster than high school kids. College referees let you be a whole lot more aggressive than high school does. High school penalizes you for things that is normal in college. But truthfully, this is not a very popular decision, but I would like to see the number of matches that the kids wrestle during the season cut down. I think they're wrestling too much. You look at college, they'll wrestle 4.5 months and get usually between 20 and 30 matches, sometimes between 30 and 40. But we got kids now wrestling 3 months and getting 60, 65. And as long as they're not hurt, that's fine. But I don't know. I just have a problem with, and I noticed some of the states like Pennsylvania's cutting back. And we need to pay attention to Pennsylvania because they take it seriously up there.
They do.
And they've had it a long time. And then another thing that's not very popular that I think, and Brian Millick from Greenbrier East, we wanted to cut the weight classes a little bit in junior high, cut it to 14 instead of 16. And cut at least one weight class, maybe two weight classes in high school, and go from something that the person just coming into wrestling, a fan would understand, like 105, 115, 125. I've been around wrestling for 60 years, and I still have trouble. They change the weight classes every 3 or 4 years, and I can't keep up with the daggone weight class.
Yeah, it's...
And these new people coming in, I mean, we want to get more fans, and what we do, we throw some very difficult weight classes to remember. We have tournaments for 15 hours that a new person just can't, you know, an old pro can sit there and they know what to expect, but new people don't.
Yeah, and it's tough. I can agree with the number of matches going down. Everybody wants to go to these big tournaments and get all these matches in, and nobody goes and wrestles a dual or tri or even a quad anymore. You know, just don't see it. And I get it. Guy Holiday, if you're listening to this, you guys are expensive. You know, it's hard to say you're wrestling a quad, you bring in two mats, it's three officials. You know, you're looking at $500-$600 for an evening, and it's hard to host something like that, pay the officials and make any money.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part about this is, you know, Raleigh County Schools isn't giving any of these schools money for athletics. It's just not happening. You know, I coached at Liberty for 8 years and got $0 from Raleigh County Schools as far as, hey, we need new uniforms. Hey, we need this. Hey, we need that. I fundraise. And I hate fundraising. Like, it's just not my thing. You know, that's the whole reason that Raider Rumble at Liberty, that's why I started that. I'm like, the quickest, easiest way to fundraise is to run a tournament. Entry fee, concession, door, you're going to make some money. And that's why I like to host these league matches. You know, 2 years we've been able to pay rent at our facility. We bought about $4,000 to $5,000 worth of training equipment for the kids this year, as far as bands, pull up bars, slam balls, just, you know, we decked the room out and some training.
Now you guys are nonprofit, aren't you?
We're a nonprofit.
Yeah, and you and the kids have to pay an entry fee, but that liability insurance, right?
So that covers, we are part of the Coalfield Youth Wrestling Conference, and that takes care of insurance, dues, rent for the building, uniforms. You know, that's what the entry fee is. That's the only cost as far as us goes. Now, if you go wrestle open tournaments, you're going to pay for your kids to go wrestle on those. But we have league matches, and there's 7 or 8 of them a year. Your kid goes, wrestles for free, and that's what the conference thing is about. So, yeah, we're a nonprofit. We was able to buy 2 new wrestling mats for the youth league this year, some score clocks, stuff to help us be able to run some tournaments a little easier than what we are now, because we've been borrowing mats from Arsenal and Woodrow, and Woodrow's still got some of those antique mats that weigh 8,000 pounds. So.
Yeah, they, and what if I'm a poor kid down on Route 3 and I don't have a rat ride and I ain't got $50? What? And I want to wrestle.
We'll never turn a kid down over money. If they need shoes, if they want to wrestle and they don't have a ride, hey, I'm coming up Route 3 every day to practice. You need a ride, or there's other people that are coming up Route 3. We'll make sure you get a ride. The $50 thing, I mean, it's to cover our expenses, but we're not going to let a kid go without. And I just think that would be absolutely crazy to hold a kid back because they can't afford something.
Oh, yeah. What do you see yourself? You're a young guy. Where do you see yourself 20 years from now? How many kids you got wrestling? Just
2.
2.
Yeah, my oldest is 7. This was his 3rd season. My youngest is 4, and it was his 1st year. So
you probably got at least 14 more years coaching.
I got a while. So I always ask my kid, you know, I coach youth football. This will be the 2nd year I've coached youth baseball. My oldest son's into everything. And, you know, he comes home from school. It's not, hey, I want to go play my Xbox, or hey, I want to go watch TV. Hey, can we throw a ball? Hey, can we do this? That's what he's into. And so we keep him involved. And I ask him every year, hey, you want daddy to be your coach? Yeah. So I'm going to coach him until he says a no, except in wrestling. He doesn't really have a choice until middle school, just because I'm too involved in this to walk away from it, kind of deal, because he doesn't want me to be there. There's other coaches that you can go work with. I'll stay away from you, but I'm technically still going to be there. I'd say minimum 8, just because I will get them through youth league. But when my kid says, hey, I'm okay, like I'm going to go with them, as long as I trust that person. Yeah. I don't want to be that dad that's down my kid's throat constantly, or ever, you know, casting a shadow over top of them, or nothing else like that. So
your dad, I forgot to ask. Your dad is he's got a pond. He rents. You go in, you pay to fish. Mm-hmm. And how long has he had that?
So
do you help with that any?
We all actually live there.
Okay.
So it's almost kind of like our own little family compound. We got about 30 acres, and so I live up on the hill above the pond, and then my mom and dad actually have a house on the dam of the pond. And then at the very end, my sister and her family live on the bottom end of the pond. So I'm 200 foot from my sister and about 500 foot from my mom and dad. Yeah, so we all live right there. Yeah, I help a lot. There's a lot of grass to be cut. But no, it's a cool thing. My kids love it. They go down there and they swim. They fish. They go to Nana and Papa's house, and they just walk down there. I'm the last house on the road. It's safe. They can ride their bikes down. The only thing you got to worry about is one of them getting in the water. They're not great swimmers, but you know, they can just run around and play and have a good time.
What kind of fish you got in there?
So we stock flathead catfish, blue cats, pretty much any species of catfish that you can think about. And we do tournament fishing. Friday and Saturday nights are tournaments. And then Sundays, like a fish for fun. If you wanted to come down, it'd be $15. You fish for 12 hours or whatever. It's catch and release.
Is it even the tournaments catch and release?
Yeah, everything's catch and release.
So you got some old catfish in there.
Old ones, new ones.
Do you have enough food for them? You got to feed them?
We don't feed them anything. A lot of people will, like say you come down and fish on Friday night and you don't plan to fish the rest of the weekend. Most people fish with live bait. You know, creek chubs, bluegills, red eyes, whatever. They go out and catch. Well, if you don't use it all,
just throw it in, I say.
And then if it survives and spawns, then you got little ones. And if we sell goldfish to use as bait, and any piece of bait that gets thrown off the pole when they're casting, we don't feed them at all. And we have carp, you know, grass carp, just to kind of help with vegetation and stuff. But
how big is the pond?
Right at 2 acres.
Wow.
Yeah, it's at its widest spot, it's, I think, 220 foot wide and then over 500 foot long.
How deep is it?
Deepest spot's probably 12 foot.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Well, Nick, I appreciate you coming by and talking to me, and I've enjoyed you've told me a few things I didn't know, actually quite a bit. I'd like to get you back sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can always think of something else to talk about. Stay in wrestling. You're good for it. And I've enjoyed watching you over the years. Unfortunately, I had to compete against you there a little bit. But you're welcome to come back anytime.
I appreciate it and appreciate you having us and what you do for wrestling. I know I always read all your articles in the Register Herald. I've been listening to your podcasts. And you got to have more people like you that's keeping wrestling known about and talked about. And, you know, you reach out to me and ask me to come do the podcast with you. And I was just super excited about it. I really enjoy listening to what you have to say and reading the articles. And I think you do an excellent job talking about wrestling and covering it for this part of the state. So, I really appreciate you having us on here. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words. And anybody else out there would like to be on our program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And we'll get you on here. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And God bless you.
Jesse James, ending up on the brink of danger, riding shotgun for the Texas Rangers. No less, young man, haven't you been told? California's full of whiskey, women, and ghostly.